My dad got me this thing that's from Michigan. It's called a Yuperchuk.
A Yuperchuk.
And
okay,
and,
where is Nate when you need him?
I know. And I guess that's some upper, you know, Michigan Peninsula thing, so I'm told. And it's a hat of sorts and kind of.
I
like
gotta look this up. A Yuperchuk.
But it's more, yeah, I don't know. It's handy though.
Not a super chunk.
No, Yuper,
okay. How do you spell this? How do you spell this? C-H-O-O-K?
I think so. Stand by.
Oh, Yuper. Yuper, as in Y-O-O-P-E-R, chook. Oh, it's a boggin with the gator built in.
Yeah, this guy.
Hold on. Okay. Okay, so that's just a really good boggin.
It is, but then, like, it has this...
The face part.
Strap thing.
Yeah.
It comes down over your face.
I'm seeing it.
And so it's, yeah, it's pretty much just a hat. Coming up in this episode, we load up your tech toolbox, we settle the kernel debate, and thou shall not package OBS. That way. Hello and welcome to Linux User Space. I'm Dan.
And I'm Leo.
Hey, Leo. I know I've only given you a few days to play around with this, but I dropped a new set of tools out there for you to play, you know, test and whatnot.
I've not stopped playing with these things.
Now that's a good answer. Yeah,
you gave it to me.
I did.
I mean, and it's true, because I keep thinking about what else could I use it for? What else could I use it for? And not just one thing. Dan, you gave me,
I don't know, we sat
here
and had 10
of them. How many tools are
in
here?
Yeah.
We whittled down the list to just a couple that we wanted to talk about here, but there's so many more. How many are there? Like, too many.
I didn't count them all, but so, like, what we're talking about is IT tools.
Okay, there's like 50.
And we'll give you a link to that, ittools.tech. And yeah, there are a pile of tools, and I've used some of them quite a bit, actually, so far. And
yeah.
The one that I used the first, you're going to laugh at this, is actually the Docker run to Docker compose tool. So I took the Docker run line for IT tools, dropped it in the Docker, you know, it converts it to a Docker compose file. And that's how I'm running IT tools.
You didn't even tell me about this one. I don't even, what?
What? Yeah. So it's like,
I need this one.
So, like, you'll see this a lot, right? You'll see a little Docker run. This is how you start up your thing. But you're like, that doesn't really jive with my setup, right? Because I've got all these stacks, as Portainer calls them, or, you know,
that's
Docker compose things. And so you want to convert that into a Docker compose file, you know, a YAML thing. And that little doodad does that for you, like the whole thing.
Yes.
It does all the work.
Okay. Yeah, this is great because I've had to do this manually, and it's mm-hmm. it's terrible. I hate doing this.
It's ripe for error. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, because some and this is I mean this used to be this way. Some of the projects that would create their own Docker files mm-hmm. and stuff would give you the Docker command to run to bring it up, but they wouldn't give you a compose file.
Right.
And so you had to go meticulously, and YAML is hard.
They can
because if you don't get the spacing right, mm-hmm. it's like, I don't like you. I'm not running this file. What is this?
Yep.
So you have to go and meticulously, right? I mean, use VS Code or something like that, and it'll help you with it. But still, it's kind of annoying.
And
then having to
run.
Make sure you, yeah. And it's like so many places for typo. Mm-hmm. So if you can just take their command and then have it magically convertize to a compose file for you. So that's exactly what this, okay.
So I totally did that.
You didn't even tell me about the coolest one.
No, I thought I'd start off that way. And so, like, I did it on their, you know, the demo page, right? So, like, I was like,
yeah.
Oh, look at this. Like, I do this here. And boom, there it was. And so that's how
this is way cool.
That's how I stood it up to begin with. And so that's,
this is way cool.
That's super helpful. And so like,
I love this.
There's a lot of other YAML tools there too, because like you said, YAML's hard, right? And so you can convert it to TOML or, you know, JSON or whatever, right? So those things are cool. I plan to probably use those in the future. My favorite one though probably is the password analysis tool. Basically checks, see how great your password is. And I love it because I'm self-hosting this and my password's not going anywhere. I'm just kind of checking it to see what sort of brute force ability it has, you know?
Yeah. I've always, my tinfoil hat goes on as soon as I see like an online password strength.
There's a lot of those.
And I'm like, these dudes are just trying to steal your password and maybe they're going to get it too.
They might.
Because I mean, did you inspect that JavaScript code to make sure that it actually doesn't copy and then send off your password into some plain text file somewhere on the internet, which is how they get your password, right?
Yeah, we're filling up the rainbow tables, right? Yeah,
exactly. But you've solved that in this case. Yeah, there's
other things
to
do
locally.
That too locally, but this one is just nice. It's right there in front of you with all the other tools.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So, by the way, folks, if you see an online password strength generator thing, don't just slap your most private password in there. That's a bad idea. That's terrible OPSEC. Don't do that. That's how you lose your password, unless you plan on changing it immediately after, or you've already changed it and you just want to see the strength of your previous password or something like that, right? As long as you're not actively using it.
But I totally feel less bad about it dropping it in here. Because I know it's not going anywhere.
Right. And in this case, you can actually prevent a container from exiting your network, right? So, you know, you don't have to worry about the JavaScript code sending stuff out. You can, like, prevent it from sending
you
anything,
have control.
Even if it tries to. Right. Yeah. So, okay. This makes Tinfoil Hat Leo very happy. And I might actually use it. Now, those password generators, the ones that you see online a lot of times are not true to life, because I think it's only taken into account brute force, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
no, I get that.
But I do like watching it, and I always say all the time with passwords, more than complexity, more than at symbols and underscores and uppercase and lowercase, length increases entropy faster.
Oh,
than
quick.
Anything else, man. So a 12-character complex password pales in comparison to a 32-character anything. And it could just be letters. And you're still talking about, orders of magnitude more years to brute force that password. Now, if you lose your password because you accidentally copy and paste it to the wrong spot, that's a different story. That's instant. We've cracked your password instantly. But yeah, anyway, I'll get off my security soapbox there. But it scares me sometimes when I think about what people do with their passwords.
I know. and it is a little scary, but there's some other tools in the crypto section to kind of do some, you know, encrypt your stuff. Like you can encrypt and decrypt text and, you know, set up hashes, and there's some other good stuff there too. So, I mean, to keep things secure, but it's not all about security. There's a lot of other stuff here too.
But one of my favorite things is, so I work in education, specifically with computers, and I have a lot of people that I have to teach subnetting to, things like that. So
just
I have
network
an IPv4.
Stuff. Yep.
The IPv4 calculator is fantastic. When we get into the conversation about looking at network information and being able to glean as much information off of that as you possibly can, right? Like, so if someone gives me like the MAC address off their Wi-Fi card, I'm like, oh, you've got a Dell, you know, that kind of thing. They've got the MAC address identifier, the vendor,
a little
identification
tool.
Stuff. Oh, that's fantastic.
That is great.
And the fact that you can run it locally, right? Like always have to, and I'm always wary about it. For the same reason I'm wary about doing the password thing, I'm always wary about putting my own MAC addresses into online MAC address lookup things. So I usually like take off the last 6 digits of that and just make it up, because it's only the first 6 digits that it works off of, right?
Right.
But now if I run it locally, I don't have to do that. I can just slap it in there and call it a day. Yeah. And know what's going on there.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It's real helpful. You see things, you know, get a DHCP lease and you're like, what is that device again? And like,
yes.
Oh yeah. It's the, you know, whatchamacallit thingamajig. And like, yeah. And I'm cool with that.
Yeah. Or you're not cool with that. And then you have to go get yourself a little.
Yeah. Where is that little? Because like I'm going to yoink that thing off the network.
Exactly. You just kill it with fire.
Right.
Get a little network stumbler. It's in this room. I know it's in this. It's really strong in here. Yeah.
Yep.
And so I've been on this weird learn HTML and CSS, learn how to do it by hand and all of that stuff. We talked about it. I'm going to say a few episodes ago, but it could have been years ago because we had that long break.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a Markdown to HTML converter. So when I take notes, a lot of times, I mean, the majority of the time, it's in Markdown format. And when I want to convert those over to something that I may actually want to publish, this is a tool that I would use to just slap it in there. It gives me all the tagging and cool stuff that I would have to manually type in there otherwise. Even having helpers like what VS Code does for you with you open it and it closes it for you. It can still be a little annoying to have to do all of that stuff. So having a converter like this,
yeah,
having already written it out, and then I don't have to do anything else to it, is fantastic. So just so many good tools. And one of my favorites, one of my other favorites, is the ASCII art generator.
Oh, I know.
Just because
ASCII art's fun.
Yeah, just because my brain still lives in 1999, and that's the coolest way to do internet graffiti, you know?
Yeah, well, and if you want to make it to the 2000s, they got an emoji picker.
Ooh, wait. How does that work?
So you can scroll through all of the emojis that are available out there that are, you know, accepted or whatever. And
it gives you the Unicode.
It gives you the Unicode stuff. I mean, it's pretty cool. And so there's a search at the top. You can search for the thing that you're looking for. Then you click on it and it copies it to your clipboard.
That's really cool. So Microsoft is Windows key space to bring up a picker.
Mm-hmm.
In Mac, it's the function key. You just press it without pressing any other button. Do you know what it is for Linux?
It might depend on your picker. And
your desktop environment.
Right. I almost want to say it's like Windows period, maybe. I don't know.
Okay, so then it's the same as in Windows, maybe. Actually,
maybe
that's
I
a good question to ask
way. Maybe I mapped it that way just so I could be the same. That might very
right.
well be.
Oh well, that would make a whole lot of sense, which is why the Windows key does the same thing in both operating systems, right?
Yeah, but this is cool too, because like I mean, some of those pickers, I don't know if they have all of them because they keep adding to these. And so this thing's probably getting updated on a regular.
Yes, absolutely. So so this is fantastic when those things aren't available to you and you still need that picker. Oh, man, absolutely. I love this thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is great. Now, you don't get the cool custom ones that we have in Discord, though.
No, you don't.
I hand trimmed those.
You did, and they look cool, and that's neat. These are also, it's pretty handy. It's a lot of handy stuff.
Yes.
IT tools.
And there's way more than what we've talked about right here. There's seriously, there's a good like 50 or 60 tools in there, and they all have some really cool usefulness to them, but. You mentioned running it locally. How can I do that for myself? So I already have Docker installed. We can skip all of that. How hard was it to get this up and running?
Crazy easy. Crazy.
Really?
I mean, crazy easy. So like I'm using Portainer as my Docker management thing.
Okay.
And Portainer, so Docker Compose stuff goes into what they call stacks.
Okay.
So you drop in the Docker Compose into the thing online. And if you had environment variables that you needed to add, this doesn't have one of those because it's very simple. There's a spot for that as well.
Okay.
In Portainer. And so, yeah, literally just dropped in the Compose file, told it to spin up. I think I did have to change my port because whatever by
I was overlapping or
whatever
something?
By default was already in use, so I changed it.
Oh,
to,
right. Does it default to 80 or 80?
I think
80,
it was 80, and so I changed it to 80/81 or what or something like that. Right. So
cool. Okay. So you would just have to remember the port that you assign it to, or if you're not running any web anything on it, you just leave
then
it
you're good.
To 80/80.
You just drop it in. Yeah. Yep. And so it was just that easy. It spun right up and pulled it down the image and did the thing.
Yeah, that's one thing that I have to get into that I haven't gotten into is some kind of Docker management tool. Because I've got three Docker hosts that I run various Docker things in. They're all in Docker Compose. And I think I already have them in the form that Portainer would like them in, right?
Right.
Like you have a folder for the application that you want to run. And then in that Compose file inside of it, it's got all of the stuff that it needs. And then like config files or whatever also live in there.
Yeah. So like Portainer lets you do the network config. It lets you do the volume config stuff. So like you can totally specify where your things are stored in the volume.
Right.
And you can change, you know, the networks that it's attached to and has available to it and whatnot.
Cool.
All of that stuff's in Portainer. It's kind of great. And so like, you don't have to do that, though. Obviously, if you're doing Docker Compose stuff now, you just, you know, drop that in the folder that you want it to be in and just Docker Compose up -D and away you go.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's probably how I'll do it initially. And then I think this is just the impetus that I needed to dive into it. Because, I mean, we're unwieldy now. I think I'm at like
it's a lot easier when you have a bunch. Yep.
Yeah, right. So there's just so many applications floating around in Docker that it would not be a bad idea to have a single pane of glass to be able to see them all.
That's where it comes in handy. Then,
yeah, right. Being able to kind of puppeteer them all from one spot is really cool.
And I know we had a brief chat about this too. Like I'm using Portainer, but that's not the only solution out there either.
Right.
We talked about Docker. I don't know how you say it.
I've been saying it docge just because I don't know how to
spelled.
Say it otherwise.
Yeah, I think it's Dodge, I think.
Is it really?
I don't know. Anyway, okay. it's from the same guy that does Uptime Kuma, which is Lewis Lamb.
Okay.
And so like he builds that one and it's simpler and it doesn't have as many features, but it still works really well.
Yeah, I think it's more of a monitoring tool than it is a configuration tool.
No, it's a configuration tool. You can stand them up and start them up and stuff like that.
Oh.
Uptime Kuma is the monitoring tool.
And
I have that as well. So that tells you if things are up or down or whatever.
Okay.
And there's a whole thing on that. That's pretty great. But the other one that is new that I just heard about myself was Komodo. And
oh right,
you were pretty stoked about that as well.
Well, I liked it because it was the name, like a Komodo dragon, and they even say it in the GitHub readme or whatever. A Komodo dragon is in the monitor lizard family, and I was like, oh yeah, you got me with the pun. Let's go.
And you know, for all those fans out there, it's written in Rust, so that's the thing.
You said the R word.
I did. And that'll tie into something else later.
Ding! Do we need some kind of bell or something like that? Rust is the word of the day.
Yeah.
So stay tuned for the next section. Mm-hmm. Rust is the topic.
So it I don't know if you're a fan or not. Doesn't matter. That's that also looks like a up and coming thing, and it seems pretty great. So
it looks like if you haven't subscribed yet, I see you. Person that's not subscribed right now. You can do that. If you're watching us on YouTube, there's just that subscribe button right down there. Just click it. Just click that one. I think if you click it twice or something, there's also a bell. You get ding. And then anytime we post anything, you'll be notified. That's really cool. So anyway, all of our episodes, and then we go back and then trim each section out. All of that comes out on YouTube. All of the educational bits, though, also head over to Tilvids, because that's just the kind of vibe they have over there.
Edutainment.
That's the one.
Yep.
So, Yeah, so if you like just the educational bits that we do, the history bits, things like that, go check them out over on Tilvids. Make sure you subscribe. So this weird, cool Fediverse thing, you can subscribe from anywhere on the entire Fediverse. But like easy from Mastodon, you can just find us over at Linux User Space at Tilvids. And then subscribe to that. And that way, you don't have to hear our insane ramblings. You just get, when the episodes drop, you get a message. That's pretty cool.
Yep, shows up in your feed.
That is right. And if you like the work that we do, whether it's all the topic stuff, that's what you enjoy, or if you really enjoy the histories or the deep dives that we like to do, you can always send us a buck over at patreon.com/a Linux User Space. You can also boost the Discord server, I think, and it gives us really like really big upload speed sizes.
Yeah, it does all kinds of stuff for us. Yeah,
I think we're I don't think we're capped out, but I think we're we've already got some of those.
Yeah, we're pretty good there. Yeah,
yeah. One of the really cool things that it gives us is that people that sit in the booth that like, so if you're I think it's just, yeah, it's just the producers. When you're sitting in the booth, listening to us, watching us, doing that whole thing, it comes to you higher quality that way.
Yes,
turns out, and the video quality is higher as well.
Yes.
So anyway, you get to benefit that on live stream days as well. So anyway, throw us a buck or two over on Patreon, or boost the server, or leave us a comment, or do whatever. Just get involved in the Linux User spaces.
Yeah. And you know, really, thank you all for your support. We truly appreciate it. Okay, in breaking news, there's some there's some division over at the kernel maintainership.
Wait a minute. This is this, no,
that's not breaking news. All right, I'm just kidding about
that. Oh my god. This has been a long-standing issue, and you can't really point to any one person. I think maybe at a specific date and time.
Sure.
If you got a timestamp on it, sure, maybe you could lay some blame on specific people, but this is a tale as old as the kernel itself.
Absolutely.
Correct me if I'm wrong, the Linux kernel was created out of this feeling of nothing's getting done the way that I want it to get done, so I'm just gonna do this instead. So
it's a story of open source from the get-go.
Yeah, it sure is, isn't it? Turns out some people are hard to work with, and
that's fair,
you know,
but sometimes they're not.
Yeah, and you know, and sometimes that pendulum swings both ways, you know what I mean? Like, sometimes we just got to give some grace, but
yep.
It's been making headlines over the past couple of, I don't know, probably actually a little while longer. It's been making social media headlines for a little while.
Yep. It's a couple of incidents. Yeah.
Yeah. It's certainly been causing a lot of waves here in the past few weeks. And this time it centers on the Rust for Linux project.
Mm.
This is really just allowing some Rust code to be maintained by Rust developers to be also shipped with the Linux kernel, which itself is written in C.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm not mistaken, there's also C++ floating around in there too, right?
I think there might be. Yeah, I don't know how much of that's actually in there, but yeah, mostly C. The core stuff is definitely C.
Yeah.
And it has been from the get-go.
Yeah, and I don't think many of the people that that are still maintaining that C++ code are very happy with it. So
yeah,
they
might not be. Yeah.
I think some of the way that a lot of the folks that have been maintaining for a long time look at Rust is the same way that those same people look at C++, see kind of how unwieldy it became, how what a bad decision it was, I think, in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so letting a lot of that color their view on bringing Rust into the kernel. So.
But those are all very technical reasons, Leo, and I don't think that a lot of the drama that's been spun up here is necessarily technical. I'm just going to put it out there.
I think you're right. I think you're right. We've been talking about Rule 1 a lot, and in our communities, Rule 1 is just to be excellent to each other. Like, that's it. So, I think a lot of the division kind of runs afoul of Rule 1.
Yeah, for sure.
this latest story kind of has its roots when Weds and Philho called it quits back in August of 2024. Probably one of the, not definitely not the first one, I don't think, because I think there were a lot of people that quit quietly. But Wedson made a couple of headlines when he did, because after over 3 years of maintainership for the Rest for Linux project, he quit over non-technical, and this is a quote, non-technical nonsense.
Exactly.
And, you know, before we go much further, I kind of want to just note that everybody, every group, every whatever, anytime you have a bunch of people working together, this is the kind of thing that comes up a lot. And yeah, the only reason that we get to talk about this is because we, you, me, everybody listening, we sit in this privileged little seat up on high, and we are able, in these open source communities, we're able to see how the sausage is made.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, these conflicts are not isolated to just
everybody's kernel. An expert from far, which, I mean, obviously, yeah, we're here on the internet, you know, blabbing about it.
Oh, well,
we're experts.
Obviously,
well,
obviously, we're right, though. So, you know,
absolutely.
That, yeah. But I think the main takeaway, though, is that the way that this is handled, the way that conflicts like these are handled, is key to the end result. And the end result is, right, good code, no regressions. You know, being able to have the most stable kernel on the planet, you know, that.
Yeah.
That...
I mean, I think to your point there, this is such a heavily relied upon thing. The quality has to be higher probably than everything else that is out there. And
right.
So
absolutely.
And so that might feel like gatekeeping at times when, you know, the level of, you know, contribution is really scrutinized. But in a way, this is not the place for your drive-by things to get, you know, happen. It needs to be a little more curated, probably, and it needs to be someone like with some experience. Now, I'm not saying any of the people that we're going to talk about here don't have experience. I think a lot of them do. I think their resumes are pretty full of, you know, success in other places. But
yeah, I think a lot of the reason that when these people quit, they made headlines was because of their resume.
Right. So, right. And yeah. I hear that. And but I also hear the other side too. You know, you get the people that just don't have enough experience yet. And so they get very frustrated when their stuff that they've worked hard on and just doesn't get included.
Right. And so I think when you look at a project like this, you can't just, and this is for really everybody that's involved, right? Like, you can't just look at the quality of the code, though you absolutely have to,
right?
I totally understand that. But I think you also have to spend a whole lot of time wondering about the quality of community, mm-hmm, that you're
fostering,
you're kind of cultivating, fostering.
Yeah.
When you say the things that you say,
it's how you say
when
it.
You say no, yeah, right, exactly. Like, it there's a good way to say no, and there's a terrible way to say no. And mm-hmm, I think sometimes we find the terrible way to say no and don't reword that before we hit send.
Right.
You know, we were having this exact same conversation about Linus so many years ago.
Mm-hmm. And he's gotten better. Don't get me wrong, he's gotten a lot better.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But I think, you know, maybe, and everybody involved could use some conflict resolution skills. You know what I mean?
Sure. And I get it. Like, you feel very strongly opinionated at what you're saying. So you say it in a harsh manner to get your point across.
Yeah.
But sometimes that doesn't sit well on the other end. You got to think about where you're sending it to. And if you're trying to build them up, you know, hammering them down is probably not the best way, right?
yeah, definitely. And so prominent Asahi Linux, well, I guess the founder of Asahi Linux, Hector Martin, quit on February 14th, just stopped everything, right? So the initial statement that he made was that he was just going to stop dealing with upstream. So
yeah, dealing with the kernel maintainership stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. And it was because of these types of conversations. I believe not Rust, the language, but Rust for Linux and specifically Rust attaching itself to the Linux kernel was deemed a cancer. Mm-hmm. And I think that was just kind of the tip of the iceberg.
Well. Yeah, it didn't sit well.
Right. Mm-hmm. Much more was said than just that. And it got worse. But that was kind of the tip of the iceberg and led to one thing led to another, I guess. And then Hector decided we're just not doing Asahi anymore at all. He's just
had enough of all of it and he's out.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not just in Hector's blog post, it's not just the maintainership stuff, not just the brick walls that he was hitting there. It was a lot more stuff, right? Asahi was taking over his life and I mean he was facing burnout. So right, right. There was a lot more to it than just some arguments on the internet.
That's what happens. I mean, you get so passionate about something and you're trying to, you know, you get so involved and you get down the rabbit hole and then you get to the bottom of it and you can't see your way out. And right. So before that consumed him entirely, he decided that he would just call it quits.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then a day later, after the conversation that Hector had, Carol Herbst decided to quit as well. Now, Carol wasn't super involved anymore, though his name was still on the list of I believe it was Nouveau was the project that they were working on, but decided over some of the words that were said that's it for Carol as well. So that's kind of what I'm getting at, is that you can say something and the way that you say it matters.
Absolutely.
And can have a bigger effect, right? Because this was a conversation about Rust for Linux, yet someone from Nouveau maintainership decided they wanted to call it quits, just fully.
Yeah.
As a result. And Carol said, however, there is one thing I can't stand, and it's hurting me the most. I'm convinced, no, my core belief is that inclusivity and respect, working with others as equals, no power plays involved, is how we should work together within the free and open source community. I understand maintainers needing to learn, being concerned on technical points. Everybody deserves a time to understand and learn. It is my true belief that most people are capable of change eventually. I truly believe this community can change from within. However, this doesn't mean it's going to be a smooth process. So that's, I think that is kind of how we encapsulate the way that we look at be excellent to each other. This is just one rule
in
our communities. Be excellent to each other. That's it. That's the only rule. And it turns out that rule has very, very broad implications. I think that's what this is saying as well.
Everybody perceives that differently. And it is a, you know, somewhat ambiguous statement. However, I mean, just sometimes it just means don't go so fast in your reply and think about what you're about to say before you say it. And simple little stuff like that will take you a long way. Ultimately, you probably don't want to do this adventure alone. So you don't really want to shoo everybody away.
Right.
Working collaboratively, especially on a project this size, seems super important, because I know I mentioned about the quality of it, but also you can't do it by yourself. It's too much. And you can't even do it with a small group at the size that it is now. There's just so many changes that need to happen on a such a rapid, you know, basis that you can't do it in a small group.
Yeah. And I think that's why we have so many maintainers. And I think,
Everybody has their specialty. Everybody has their silo, if you will. But I mean, you got to do it together, because ultimately the whole thing is a complete package, not just your individual contribution.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of, reading through a lot of the mailing list stuff, it really seems to me that the breakdown in communication is really in making sure everybody understands what it is that you're looking for. When you're looking for a contribution, right? And it's become quite obvious that there are people that are working in the kernel that just absolutely do not want Rust touching the kernel.
Yep.
I mean, I think we're already kind of past that point. I think we've that there is already some Rust in the kernel, if I'm not mistaken. A lot of the stuff that Asahi Linux has done has been upstreamed, and some of that stuff has been written in Rust. So it's we're already past the point of right. It just can't be in here.
And I don't think their vision was to like change out all of, you know, everything into just turn it into a Rust thing. No, I think they were looking to just add some modules, if you will, some bolt-on things. Specifically, I think they were looking at drivers, right? So the like right. video drivers and stuff like that. And it was just easier, better, whatever reason for them to write it in Rust and right. Get those included. And I think those are small enough components that it doesn't detract away from the rest of it. So, I mean, if it works, do it.
Yeah, I think that was Wetson's stance on getting any of the Rust code that he was trying to get into the kernel. I know that was his stance. It's just let us handle it. Let us handle the Rust stuff. One of the YouTube videos that he had linked when he was essentially resigning was essentially a conversation at a talk where a kernel maintainer was piping up about, you know, why are you forcing us to have to learn Rust to be able to maintain the code? And it didn't seem like anything that Wetson said convinced this maintainer that that's not the goal.
Right.
That is not the purpose of what they're trying to do. Wetson multiple times tried to make it clear that we will do the Rust code. In the Rust for Linux project, we will handle the Rust side of it, and we just need help plugging it in. That's really where you come in, and we can collaborate on the rest. Mm. Anything that we need to be more specific or clarify, we will.
That's the definition of collaboration right there. Right?
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah, and the definition of being excellent to each other, right?
Right?
I help you, you help me. We all go into this weird, cool circle of the Linux kernel and make it work. So it seemed to me, right, like they just didn't want to hear what Wetson had to say.
Right.
So they just kept saying the same thing over and over and over again. When that wasn't even the argument. Well,
some people are very opposed to change, even if it is helpful. I mean, that's right. Just the reality, right?
Yeah. I think some of the stuff that Hector was trying to upstream did kind of run afoul of, you know, some of the maintainers that we're submitting code to are going to have to understand at least a little bit about what's going on
right.
here to be able to actually implement this stuff into the kernel. But I do think after more conversation, it would have ended up exactly where Wedson was.
Yeah, maybe.
Where it was like, fine.
I mean,
we'll handle the Rust stuff. You handle the kernel stuff or the C stuff, and then we'll figure out how to plug it in together. But we didn't even get to that part of the conversation because Hector has been very fast and loose with taking to social media.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
just kind of explaining his side. While I don't know that I ever saw any specific distortion of the other side.
Maybe that should have been discussed before it went to the, you know, to the public, if you will.
Well, I think a lot of the maintainers that Hector was talking about on social media were having that same conversation in the same way that Hector was on the mailing list.
Yeah.
And the people having the discussion on the mailing list, look at the mailing list, not as social media.
Exactly.
And so it's a public place. Anybody can see it. You just don't get likes. You don't get the boosts
right.
you would on social media. You don't get the virality necessarily. But you know, these posts make it to Pharonix. They make it to 9to5 Linux. They make it to OMG Ubuntu. These types of conversations do go viral on their own without the help of social media.
Right.
So I don't know.
It just adds a different
pot
twist.
Pot calling the
to
kettle
it.
Black much, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, I hear you. It just adds a different twist to it, though, I guess, when you take it that
right.
way. Because then you're encouraging people that don't know what they're talking about to, you know, throw their two cents in. And
true.
You know, that doesn't necessarily help.
Right, exactly. I can totally see that. But, you know, in both instances, you're not being excellent to each other.
No, definitely not.
It really does smack of, and you know, I know it's in public, so it's not technically talking behind people's back, you know, but it is, it does kind of feel that way when you carry on the conversation without pointing specifically to what.
And ultimately, most of these get hashed out because, like, I mean, I'm reminded a little bit of the Bcash FS stuff that they were trying to get merged in. And it wasn't so much the stuff that they were trying to get merged in. It was the way they were trying to do it. And the timing of it was really not good because, like, they were at a point where they were, like, doing a release candidate and they wanted to get it in for, you know, the final thing. And it's like, no, that needs to start earlier in the development cycle, and especially the size of the changes that they were proposing. It's like, that's touching everything. Like, hold on a minute, let's calm down and let's do this a little bit. But they didn't say it that way, right? They didn't say like, hold up, we're just gonna pause on that. They know, they said, get that out of here. And you know, everybody was all bent about it, right? Because like, oh no, that's the end of Bcash FS, it's never gonna happen. You know what I mean?
Those headlines. So the way that you say things really, really makes a difference. And you know, one of the things that about that particular problem though is that the solution was clear. Mm-hmm. It's not what the developers of Bcash FS wanted to hear, but the requirement was clear. You're out of the merge window. Like,
exactly,
we don't have time this cycle to be able to merge the stuff and test the stuff that you want to be able to merge. These are big changes. We're going to have to wait to the next window.
Right.
But that's what I mean about being specific about what it is that you want. What hurdle do I have to clear to be able to do what I want to do, get it into the kernel, give me some bullet points.
Right.
I will check off those boxes. I will make sure that it meets those standards. And then we'll submit it again.
But then be patient. Like on the other side, be patient and make sure that your timing is right. And, you know, your technical points are understood. And like, just try to, you know, communicate all of that stuff from the other side as well. I think both sides need to hear each other.
Yeah. But I guess at least in the Rust case, you are kind of at an impasse. There is no amount of bullet points that is going to solve. The upstream maintainer does not want Rust.
Yeah.
There's just, and you want to write your driver in Rust. You're at an impasse. There's just no way to do that. And it is clear how that can cause or at least exacerbate the burnout that you're already in the middle of.
Yeah.
And can kind of just cause you to throw your hands up and be like, nah, I'm just done. This was fun before. You know, even with the pain, we were making progress. It was doing good. And then on the other hand, you know, in Hector's and specifically Asahi Linux's situation, you know, you had it coming from both ends. Mm-hmm. You had it on the maintainership level, at the kernel level, and then you had it from the user level.
Right.
Right. Hector specifically cites that donations were slowing down while user expectations were heating up.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's just an untenable situation. So, you know, there's absolutely no blame that I don't blame him at all. For, you know, kind of throwing his hands up and saying, you know,
it's a fairly daunting task to begin with. And I think we all saw that coming. Like, this was like, you've got a lot of work ahead of you. I don't know if you know what you signed up for.
Yeah. Well, but I think he did.
But then he did. Like, he did. He did know. Like, and he pulled a bunch of it off. Right. So, like,
because he was, I think he was working on the Wii or something like that. He was doing hardware hacking prior to
PS3.
And 4. But specifically the Wii. There were a bunch of people that were really just using his work to play emulated games, right? Stolen games, things like that. And that puts you in a really, really situation between Nintendo. Nintendo's going to come and eat your lunch.
Right,
and that's quite clearly the only way that people are using it, right? And that's not the way he intended it. But then the users were getting louder and louder and louder about, hey, this needs to happen, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, he's been in this situation before, burned him out before. But on the bright side, he has left behind him an entire C-suite, essentially, of...
Yeah, he stood up a community, and there were people that were following and contributing, and like, there's a whole bunch of people. It's not just him anymore, so that's good.
Right. So this is not a oh no, Asahi Linux is dead. This is a Hector Martin stepped away from Asahi Linux, but Asahi Linux is going to continue on.
I think so. Yeah,
there mm-hmm. are there have been a lot of people that stepped up to continue on the right. project, and so I am still excited because I've got Apple stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
I am still excited to see to know that if I decide to just I'm done with Mac OS on a couple of these devices, that there is an off ramp for me.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's not like
a functional off ramp too, not just like, you know, broken parts.
Right.
Because they come a long way.
Right. I think one of the things that that really got him was the Thunderbolt. Is that what it was? I think
that
it was
one of them. The audio stuff for whatever reason was really hard too for a while.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think a lot of that got fixed up. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing about that is that he got a lot of flack for it being untested. There was a lot of user feedback about, you know, why would I use this operating system? It's untested. It, you know, it's flaky. It crashes all the time, except for the fact that they've got the receipts on this. 43,000 users.
That's a lot.
Using this.
Yeah.
All the time. And that's a number big enough for me to understand its limitations and feel good about installing it on a device that I've got, especially if I'm looking for that off ramp or if for some reason Apple's like, you know, that's no longer supported. Well, yeah, it is. From Asahi, it is.
Yeah.
So that gives me a whole lot of hope.
Yeah. I hear that.
For,
yeah, because we're
when
kind
Apple
of in
decides.
That boat with like the M1s. I mean, real soon, right?
You think so?
I mean, I think that's the first one to drop off of the
oh,
that
yes.
flavor, right? I mean, so like they're going to stop supporting that probably somewhat soonish.
Yeah, I don't know. Apple's got a pretty good reputation. I mean,
it's going to hang
they'll
on
drag
bit,
you along but... for a good 10 years most of the time.
Yeah, but ish. I mean, you know, we're halfway there, right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. For
you know
sure.
what I'm saying?
And that's exactly what I'm looking at Asahi Linux to be for me is a really cool off ramp just in case I ever need it or if I just get tired of mm-hmm. what I'm running on it right now. It's going to be really cool. But on that front, on the Asahi moving forward front, there was something that came out just a little bit before we actually came on air. And in private conversations between Christoph Hellwig, it was a bit of a player in the previous stuff, had private conversations with Linus Torvalds, and Linus told him that he will override maintainers' opposition to Rust in the kernel if it comes to it. So it seems like maybe a little late, but it does seem like there is a clear path for Rust to make it into the kernel, or to continue.
That's promising.
Making itself into the kernel. So it seems like there things are looking up. Maybe a little, maybe not as fast as we would like it to happen, but things are looking up.
Yeah, the ripples will smooth on the water, and things will settle down again, and we'll get back to, you know, boring, you know, Linux kernel releases.
I like boring.
I do. We all do.
So if you haven't found us on the web, we live like everywhere. We've got ourselves a Lemmy. This is something that we've recently been spending a whole lot more time on. We've got the news channel over there. We've got the user space channel over there where we can talk about some opinion stuff that just maybe is a little more timely. You know what I mean? Stuff, evergreen stuff, right? And then we've also got the episodes channel where if you don't want to hear any of that chatter, none of the news, none of the chatter, you can just get the episodes over there. And you can subscribe anywhere on the Fediverse. You got a Mastodon account and you don't have a Lemmy account, that's cool. And you can still leave comments and see other people's comments. People can comment to you and it comes to you through Mastodon. You don't need a Lemmy account to come hang out on the Lemmy. So if you need help getting attached to yeah. one of your cool Fediverse accounts, you hop into one of our spots and we'll let you know. We'll help figure it out. Because, I mean, the Fediverse is great and all, but it can be a little overwhelming if you're not familiar with all its little nooks and crannies.
Yeah, ultimately, it's all just RSS stuff. So if you just got an RSS feed reader thing,
yep,
you can do that too.
You can do that too. But if you're Fediverse averse, you can do the Reddit thing. We have ourselves a subreddit. We've got ourselves a Discord server. We are, we're on Mastodon. We have a Telegram channel. We are in Matrix. We do the Twitch live streaming thing, though that comes over to YouTube eventually. So we'll usually do the live stream midweek and then I'll post that on Friday or Saturday on the YouTube if you missed it. And then of course we've got all the social media presence as well. So go find us wherever. We're out on the internet all over the place.
Yeah, we are. Links will be in the show notes. All right, Leo. This next one's another controversial one, a little bit.
And, yeah.
You know, thou shalt not package OBS that way. That came down, and there was legal action that was threatened out of this at one point in the conversation. So, yeah, it goes back to rule number one.
Yeah. Well, don't know. You gotta, when you're trying to make a point, and you're trying to get some movement, and you feel like you're not being heard, and it kind of seems like, I don't know, maybe if I just pay a lawyer to threaten them, they'll do it.
I mean, I guess, but if you're shouting into an echo chamber, I mean, was that effective?
I mean, kind of, because we got a resolution, right?
Something happened, yep. Yeah.
Right, but you spend a lot of goodwill. Mm-hmm. By doing something like that, right? Like, this is why they call that the nuclear option.
Yeah, you've
because
all the bridges.
Even though, right, even though you push your agenda forward, you kind of hurt everybody in the process. And that's exactly what happened here. So for those that don't know, Fedora has had flat pack versions of the software that they package, a lot of the user-facing software that they package. So you could DNF install it, but you can also Flatpak install it. And this is the repository that Flatpak has enabled by default. Fedora.
Fedora has their own repo enabled by default for Flatpaks. Right. Yes, that's what you want to say.
Yes. Right. There we go. All right. Now, this is not FlatHub.
Right.
So Fedora maintains its own. And here's where the wires get crossed. OBS maintains their own Flatpak, and they publish it in FlatHub.
Correct.
Well, OBS is also packaged by Fedora, so you can DNF install OBS, but you can also Flatpak install OBS. But here's the kicker in Fedora.
Right.
If you don't go manually install FlatHub, then the OBS packaged version is not available to you. But also, if you do have FlatHub enabled, you install it either in the GUI or in the command line, you're prompted with a choice. You could install the Fedora one or the FlatHub one. And it turns out that the Fedora one was kind of broken. Sometimes.
Ish.
A lot of times.
I mean, I would say it's some of it's by choice. Like, they don't give you all of the codecs, right? I mean, because Fedora is very much about following the license requirements, you know, free and open type license requirements. And some of those codecs, we all know, they're not free or open. And so they're not included. So in a way, it's broken in the sense that if you wanted to use those, they're not available to you. And so then that is definitely a thing. However, if you're comfy with those limitations, then it's not broken in a way.
Right. Exactly. But this also extended to some of the libraries being changed and leading to application breakage too.
Yeah, that's where it went bad.
Here's the thing though. Like, that probably would have been mostly okay-ish if the people that were experiencing all the troubles weren't going to the OBS tracker and saying, hey, your thing is broken. I'm running Fedora. Why is it broken? Fix it, please.
Right.
Okay, they probably didn't say please. But
they might not have said please, which is, you know, leads you back to number one.
You get about, you get about 200 of those requests, and it's like, yo, what? It works just fine. What are you talking about?
Right.
We can't replicate that problem. And then you find out that they're not using your package.
Mm-hmm.
They're using another package that was packaged differently than the way that you specifically put yours together, and you know that it works. So, all right. So there is the problem. Now, there wouldn't have been legal action if there wasn't a follow-on problem.
Yes.
Which is
the issue got reported, and there was a little bit of time that elapsed before anything got replied to.
Yeah. So Joel on the OBS project posted in the Flatpak SIG.
Yeah.
I forget what SIG
Special
stands for.
Interest Group.
That's the one. And waited about 3 weeks before he decided to say, since it's clear that Fedora does not have any interest in any rational discussion at this point and has decided to resort to name-calling, we are now considering the Fedora Flatpak's distribution of OBS Studio a hostile fork.
Hmm.
One thing led to another, and lawyers got involved.
Well, I mean,
And so let's kind of play this out in our heads. Like, if lawyers got involved and we actually got legal action that said that Fedora can no longer use the OBS name, you got to get rid of all of this stuff, we would have been in an ice weasel situation.
Mm-hmm.
And for quick context, Mozilla said that Debian could no longer, because they made changes to it, call their browser experience Firefox anymore.
Right.
So Debian kept making their changes and said, fine, we'll make a new icon and call it Ice Weasel. And so they did for quite a few years until recently. Now they use the ESR version. Everything is smoothed over. They're using Firefox now.
Right.
But that would have been what Fedora would have had to have done with their version of OBS 2. But we didn't get there.
Absolutely. And there's a couple of issues. I mean, one of them, the main one is on GitLab, the GitLab for Fedora in the special interest group. We'll link to that. And we'll link to the Pager? I think that's how you say that.
Pagerey.
Yeah, it probably is French. I don't know. There's another issue over there.
It's Pajure.
Pajure? sure. I don't know.
We need a canonical pronunciation of
someone
this word.
Someone will correct
somehow.
Us. I will guarantee it.
Please do.
Anyway, that issue is a lot longer. There's a lot more comments on that. And they definitely, it went a very strange route. And some of the things that were brought up were not related to the issue itself. And like somebody said, we should just stop Flatpaks altogether.
That's been a long-standing thing where there've been a lot of folks that are just like, stop Fedora with the Flatpak RPM weirdness.
Yep.
And that's not going to happen. So,
and then there's other ones that say, well, you need to make sure you get your changes pushed upstream. Like, you need to be, you know, more, you know, better about that. I don't know. There was a lot of back and forth. So
yeah,
if you want to read all the comments, go ahead. We'll link to that thing. Where was I going with that? I don't really know, other than
I think you might have been leading into Matthew Miller's comment about Fedora's a big project and you got to make sure that you say things in the right spot. And you know, is that really a developer's job, right? Like, because OBS puts it out there.
Probably not.
There's already a canonically there's a christened package. Like, this is it. This is the one. And then Fedora,
I get that,
takes it.
But if you're going to go to the nuclear route and threaten legal action, wouldn't you try to go to the leadership of the other project? Just saying.
Be excellent to each other.
So,
well, yeah. Matthew Miller said, I'd like to remind everyone that Fedora is a big project largely comprised of volunteers. There are a lot of things going on at once. We can't always make decisions instantly, and reporting an issue to one special interest group isn't raising it with the whole project. It's not really fair to assume that we're not interested in a reasonable discussion, and it seems very quick to jump to nuclear-level threats. Yep, that's a quote. Okay. Could we please de-escalate the drama? I'm sure everyone wants what's best for both projects and for our users.
Well said. That really is well said. Yeah.
Right. So it looks like moving forward, both Fedora and OBS are going to be working closer together so that people know where to send, complaints. Where's the complaint box?
Yeah, no,
but also,
yeah, long story short, right? They did have a conversation together and they did come to a resolution, if you will. And so, like, they've agreed to make sure the issues that exist in the Fedora Flatpak will get worked on and that they'll communicate better as, you know, both projects will try to communicate together and work collaboratively.
Look at that. People working together after legal action. But, you know, sometimes, I guess, when
yeah,
when a lawyer loves a project very, very much.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I'll add to that, too. Like, some other good things came out of this. It looks like the Fedora project itself is updating their council documentation. There's a PR out there. I'll link to that, where they're talking about, you know, as a project, we should definitely try to upstream our changes to the to the upstream projects so that everyone can benefit from these things. And, you know, that makes our project flourish as well as everybody else.
Right. And it's not like Fedora wasn't contributing upstream, but I think.
Yeah,
I
mean, yeah, they were doing that. Yeah.
Yeah. Every project has deficiencies, and it's just good to see that that they're not being overlooked. And when they are being overlooked, and, you know, maybe with not legal action, but, you know, when they're brought up to the right people, to the right place, as long as the right ears hear it, those concerns get taken care of. That's really good.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's like software and the project, everything benefits from iterative changes. They don't have to be all at once. They can be small little changes. Just keep piling them on, and eventually you've got good stuff.
That is the way that it works.
All the links in the show notes.
Yeah, and you can find those show notes over at linuxuserspace.show. So if you were wondering, where'd that quote come from? I don't believe them. Did they actually say that? I don't know. That seems kind of crazy. Well, you can find the quotes that we quote on the video itself, like they actually pop up down there. But if you want to see the source of those particular text-only quotes that show up on the video, you can go to linuxuserspace.show/the episode number. So in this case, this is 507. And all of the links that we talk about, everything that we bring up, everything that you hear about on this show is both in the show notes, and those also find their way over on Lemmy and Reddit too. So if you follow along with either of those communities, you will have seen those quotes before we actually talk about them on the show. But if you don't follow along in those communities, all of the information, I promise we're not lying to you. They're all in the links. You can click on that stuff and follow up and make sure that we know what we're talking about. I think we do.
Yeah,
probably.
Most of the time.
We read it once.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if we do get it wrong.
Yeah.
Because, you know,
it happens.
We're not perfect. You can always tell us how wrong we are by emailing us at contact@linuxuserspace.show, or there is a contact button on linuxuserspace.show. You can click on that. I think it's contact us. Is that what it is?
I think so.
Remember
now. Something like that.
Contact. Something like that. Anyway, there's a button that says talk to us. I don't think
more
in those words, but it's close. Yeah, more or less. On the website. So go click on that button. You don't even have to put in anything other than the body of the email. And I think maybe a title. I think maybe that's it. And then ship it off to us. We'll get it in our inbox.
Absolutely.
And we'll be able to talk about it on the show, or straight up just make a correction.
We can make changes.
I like being right.
Yeah. And if we got a link wrong or something, we can make changes to the show notes and whatnot. Absolutely.
Absolutely. So if you see something we don't see, you let us know and we'll figure it out. And hopefully we won't throw any vitriol your way because, you know, rule one.
Yeah, be excellent.
Try to be excellent to everybody, right? That's key. It's key to everything.
There's a theme here. Well, that brings us down to next time.
Sure does.
And next time, we've hopefully got something that we've been sandbagging for a while.
we're back on the horse. We have saddled the horse. I don't know why I'm using a horse analogy, but we have saddled the horse. We've got on the horse. We've spurred the horse.
It's a bit like the Wild West. I don't know.
You know, we're treading untreaded waters, or some do horses tread water? I don't know. I don't want to know the answer to that question.
You can lead them to
don't
the water.
Don't email us. Yeah, don't email us at contact@linuxuserspace.show to tell me whether or not horses tread water. Don't do that. but you know. We're there. I think we're good. I think we're back on track.
And so we've had this plan for a while. We've talked. Yeah. We're going to talk about the Snap universal packaging stuff.
Yeah, and a little bit of history,
and hopefully some history on that and where they came from, and you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. It turns out.
Yeah.
It was always snappy. Uh-huh. It was a little snappy.
Yeah.
Getting them started up, but maybe not so snappy.
Well, I mean, it might be clickbait.
It wasn't. They were slow.
Anyway, that's our plan, is to talk about that, probably a couple other thoughts, and you know, whatever else we can cram into the show too. In between times, you can catch us on Twitter, Mastodon, Telegram, Matrix, Discord, whatever. You know, give us some real time chatter back and forth, and you know, talk, you know, give us your suggestions, like over on Lemmy, or you know, even Reddit, one of those places. You know, talk to us, give us some feedback so that we can bring them up in the show. All the great links are and the show notes are at linuxuserspace.show. So, Leo, where can we find you on this fine internet thing?
You can find, by the way, if you're watching the video, it's down in the bottom right-hand corner.
You can see it. Yeah.
It's at Leo Chavez at mastodon.social and at leochavez.org on Blue Sky.
All right, and you can find me at KC2BZ at mastodon.social and at Monetary Abyss at the Blue Sky app thing, whatever that turns out to be.
It's almost like you didn't remember.
I didn't remember, and I don't know. I need to set up my domain thingy.
It's super simple. We got to do it on the live stream, but not, well, actually, okay. Well, you know what? Maybe not stream. On the live stream.
Well, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
not.
Well, because you got to log into the DNS and that's.
Oh, yeah. Maybe I don't want to show
maybe,
that.
Maybe not.
That's
maybe,
probably
yeah,
a good point.
Maybe not. But
anyway, I need to do it.
But, you know.
And it needs to get done. But you know what? You can find the show at linuxuserspace.show on Blue Sky. That's a real easy one to find. And obviously, we're at linuxuserspace everywhere else, too. So you can find us.
That's right. Just type it in the internet searchifier and you'll find it. You'll find it. Did you know ChatGPT knows about us? You can ask AI about
us. I'm sure it does. Yeah, it knows. It scrapes the internet, so why wouldn't it?
It probably has the transcripts of all of our shows. You could probably ask it. I don't know, maybe.
Well, hopefully we're making it smarter, because that would be good.
That's a stretch.
I know, but I'm trying. Like, my small contribution here. Anyway, come back and a couple of weeks, and you can catch more Linux User Space. See ya.
See you later.
ASCII art text generator?
Don't you do this to me, because that's
picker.
Awesome.
I mean, those Hold are both on. Really important.
Holy crap, that is good. Wow, that looks great, actually.
It's kind of handy.
Oh, God, why does... Oh, and there's other fonts. Get out.
Mm-hmm. A lot of them, honestly.
Dude.
That list keeps growing.
Okay, we're calling off the show. We're just playing with these tools from now on. That's all we're doing now. Bears. Oh, get out.
Whimsy.
Whimsy. Let's see this. Ooh.